tool wise, there's a lot of vendors who want to sell you a lot of different things. And I think as a teacher, you kind of get caught up in the bells and whistles of things. And sometimes you're not thinking about the pedagogical piece underneath it. What are we trying to do educationally that lends itself to needing this tool?
You're listening to EdTech Heroes, a podcast that looks at how teachers in today's classrooms can use technology to improve student learning. In each episode, a hero in the world of education will share their story and discuss how innovation can influence the minds of the next generation. Let's jump in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to EdTech Heroes. I'm Neff, and today's guest is Kim Knighty. After teaching business and technology courses for 20 years, Kim now serves as Director of Technology at North Canton City School District in Ohio, where she works in the areas of defining and implementing innovative initiatives that support teaching and learning. Kim, welcome to EdTech Heroes.
Thank you. I always laugh when I hear how long I've been doing this, that type of thing. So, sorry.
No, that's a badge of honor to have been doing it for so long. And I actually want to start there. You have had the pleasure of working over the past two decades and over the past 2 years that have been formative for lots of reasons. Can you walk me through how things have changed from your perspective over the last 2 years? Or if you want to take it all the way back, how things have changed over the last 20 years?
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes. And actually, this is like, I think this is my 27th year in education in general. So I've done a lot, been a lot of places, you know, and done a lot of things. So I feel really lucky because I've not only seen the technology side of things, but I've also been a teacher. I've been a director of instruction. So I've seen kind of that pedagogical side of things and feel really lucky that I have that cumulative experience. Boy, things have really changed, right? So when I started teaching, you know, not everybody had computers. And so clearly that was different. A little bit of trivia. I was actually the first person at our district that had the internet, paid $14.99 a month, and had my dial-up modem, and off we went and never looked back. So, you know, now when I look at, just like you said, the last 2 years, I will again say we felt really lucky here because we have a one-to-one rollout. We had started that many years ago. We asked our community to support us through a permanent improvement levy. So we were lucky enough that we had a device for each student in each grade level to go home. And we also have a learning management system. We use Schoology. And so we have done that for years. So our parents, our families, and our students and teachers were all pretty comfortable with that system. What I keep saying, and people laugh at me when I say this, is that even though we had all of this technology and these systems and tools and whatnot, it was still a shove off the digital cliff when all of this happened, because some people who maybe made some choices not to engage with the tools and the technology in the past kind of not only had to, but I think what happened was they started to realize, hey, I can do this or I can do that. And I think it opened the doors in a lot of ways to that own, like that self-introspective learning, where instead of it's being pushed on you, it was like, well, wait a minute, I need to do this. What tool, you know, do I have in my to allow me to do that more efficiently? So I feel like that's how we changed here. And I feel like that's how we changed, you know, in all over the world, you know, was the necessity of having to change and look at the tools that we have and how we're using them. You know, it was incredible. I still say I made a great decision in the fall of 2019 to buy. I mean, we had the LMS, but I rolled out Screencastify back then because I knew that a lot of our teachers and students were using it in kind of smaller capacities. And I am kind of limited on the tools that I purchase because there are so many, and there are so many of value, really. But I'm pretty closed on, I don't buy everything, let's put it that way. So that was a tool that I purchased in the fall. And oh my gosh, I mean, then in the spring when we went on remote learning, it was amazing to see how our staff and our students started using Screencastify and video to help educate kids and even to give instructions to families. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the times they would put videos together and say, okay, here's how we're going to do things this week. And so I think that they also went beyond just a textual digital tool into really learning the value of video.
Certainly. And I'm really intrigued by how forward thinking you are. You were able to lay the building blocks for a technology program that was able to endure a pandemic and also has created tools that are varied enough to be able to speak to all of the teachers that you have throughout the district. Can you tell me a little bit about how you think about implementing new technology, how you think about what tools to invest your time and money into, and how you know that a tool is going to stand the test of time to be useful no matter what happens?
Right. No, believe me, it's a lot of effort because there's a ton of tools out there. I think it started because I was lucky, I taught a business program. So I taught in a computer lab. And so we had, 30 desktops in there and I had a laptop. And then I started to push the boundaries and be like, I don't want to be up at my desk. I want to be out in my room with my kids. So I wrote grants and I got a laptop that had a, flippable screen that I could write on. And I figured out a way to connect using Apple TV up to my projector. And so, I saw the value. I had all kinds of different tools that I used in order to more deeply engage with my own students. So I kind of already knew the value of it as an educator. And then when I started to get into roles where I got to make decisions, I kind of used that same mentality with making those decisions moving forward. It was really important to me that every student had a device. It was really important to me that every teacher had a device and had a professional device that would be flexible enough that they could use it in different ways. I wanted them untethered. I didn't want them to be connected to a desk or connected to a projector. I wanted them to be able to be out in the classroom with the students. And so that's how we ended up purchasing that. Tool-wise, there's a lot of vendors who want to sell you a lot of different things. And I think as a teacher, you kind of get caught up in the bells and whistles of things. And sometimes you're not thinking about the pedagogical piece underneath it. What are we trying to do educationally that lends itself to needing this tool in order to do it? We just look at kind of the tool and ooh, look what I'm doing in my classroom, but it may not be providing real value to teaching and learning and assessing. So that's kind of the benchmark I always look at is it really providing pedagogical value to the classroom? Does it help children learn, engage, assessment? How are we learning what kids know? Because sometimes just a piece of paper on a desk, on a Tuesday at 9:30 in the morning isn't all they know. Right. Mm-hmm. Or that child may have trouble writing, or that child may have trouble, with whatever, and they can do it better by speaking to you. Right. Sure. So we want to make sure that we have tools that are available that are flexible. And to your point, stand the test of time. So computers that do that, the type of video like Screencastify, we did pick one other tool that we went with this year out of kind of all the ones out there, which was Kami. We like things that integrate with our LMS because, that makes it so much easier. We are a Google Apps for Education school. So when you start to look at how all of those tools work together, that makes it better for teachers and then end result better for students.
Yeah, absolutely.
Money's also a factor. So
you don't have infinite money?
I know. I keep shaking the tree out in the parking lot area, but it doesn't drop anything. So, but all kidding aside, we all have budgets, right? And we can't make more widgets. So we have, a finite budget to work with. And so it's really important to me if I'm going to write a check, for something, I need to know that it has the value that I need it to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like there were so many nuggets in that. But I want to go back a little bit to something that you said toward the beginning there in terms of what technology allows educators to be able to do and how it might transform learning. And there was such an amazing example there in terms of the difference between a desktop and a laptop and how a laptop makes a teacher more mobile that might facilitate more small group instruction versus feeling like a teacher is in a corner with a desktop and that's the only way to engage in education. And we think about that a little bit from a software perspective as well. Do we have the tools to be able to turn assessment away from pencil and paper to something else to be able to include more learners? And I think that that is such an eye-opening way to think about the procurement of educational technology from what is currently happening, what are the barriers that we might hope to break down, and how might technology allow us to do that? I also know that you're a strong believer in something called the TPACK model. Can you tell us a little bit about that and maybe how it relates to how you think about technology more broadly?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I stumbled across this. I mean, I said at the beginning of this how many years I've been in this game, but, you know, old dog, new tricks, right? You always have to keep learning. So I kind of stumbled upon this a few years ago and I thought, you know, I've always kind of been looking for that. I'm a visual learner, so mm-hmm. I like a diagram and I like to be able to look at something and just understand it. So when I first saw TPACK, I was like, oh my gosh, this is really what I've been trying to talk about with our teachers and what I've learned through being a tech director, you know, again, picking those tools that support teaching and learning, right? It's kind of like a Venn diagram, right? So there's three circles and they kind of intersect. And the top circle in the diagram originally, the top circle is technological and pedagogical and content knowledge. So it's really, do you know your, people know their content. If you talk to a math teacher, I mean, they will talk to you for an hour about, you know, their favorite kind of math, right? And the same thing with social studies, they'll break into an era that they love. So, you know, people go into teaching because they love the content typically, right? And so they feel very passionate about it and they continue learning in it and they may be very, very strong in their content. But the other two pieces are that pedagogical that I've said before and the technological. What I like about it is it's flexible enough that for me, I would flip the model. So where you have content and pedagogy. So what is the content? What am I teaching them? How am I teaching it to them? The technology to me is the base of that, right? So what tools do I need to make all of that happen successfully? And then a piece that I would probably add to that circle, and I actually have done that in our district, is assessment. Because I really feel like assessment is such a big piece of teaching and learning that gets overlooked. What do we need them to know and how do we assess that they know it? And again, how do we kind of break out of that traditional multiple choice, fill in the blank, and that type of the learning that we've always done because we've always done it? You know, how can we use technology to figure out what they know about what we're teaching them. So I may be teaching a lesson about the Civil War, and I may know all of that content, and there are things I want them to get. Are they necessarily dates, or are they a general timeline? You know, are they necessarily names, or are they concepts of things that happened during that timeline? So then how can we, you know, that's the content, how we're teaching it. And then the technology is, you know, are there other ways that we can determine what students know beyond just the traditional forms of assessment? So TPACK to me has been a way to look at that and talk with your teachers about that. To me, it's also PD. It's you know, teacher evaluation, okay? Because those are conversations that I can have. I don't ever want to look at a teacher and say, you know, teachers never are doing things the wrong way. You know what I mean? They may not know enough about technology to feel comfortable with it, or maybe they haven't learned, you know, this a new pedagogical approach, or maybe they're still learning about their content. But, you know, to be able to kind of self-assess and look at all three of those buckets and say, okay, I feel really strong here. I'm pretty good here, but man, I, you know, this is where I struggle. To me, that's a way of then them as a learner being able to go forth and pull in that knowledge. And then how do I help? Right. So how can I help fill in the gaps for them? Is it technology? Like, what do you need? Do you need to feel more comfortable with using video? So what do you need from the technology to make you more comfortable to support those other two, you know, pieces? That's why I get kind of passionate about TPAC, because I just feel like it was the first time that I ever went, yes, that makes so much sense to me. So
I think I'm getting excited about it too. And part of it is that I think it narrows the conversation a little bit. Throughout our time speaking, you've said a ton of times that there are so many technology tools. And we all know that's so true. We could find thousands of tools that could be used in the classroom to do a particular thing. But when we look at it from this TPAC model, we understand a little bit about the goals and we get to drill down on those goals. And when we look at technology from that lens, it gives us an opportunity to be able to evaluate what's going to work for our students and what's not. I even think a little bit about this Civil War example. If we just started out on a mission to teach kids about the Civil War, there will probably be tons of technology tools that we would be able to use for that purpose. But if we drill it down a little bit and we say, really what I want to get out of this is for students to understand the significance of Gettysburg to the Civil War, then it becomes even smaller. And we might even be able to drill down a little bit more beyond that. And I also think it's important to think about technology as being intertwined with our pedagogy as educators. I think a lot of times we can get into this idea where we're like, technology, technology, technology. And then on the other side, we think about our pedagogical understanding and what it means to be a good teacher. But those two things are married and they have to be in order for us to be effective, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, you know, I think sometimes teachers that don't have a lot of they don't feel comfy cozy with technology and they get almost overwhelmed because there are so many of those tools out there, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't know where to start. And they're like, you know, this just keeps coming at me. And how is it, how my time is really valuable. So if I take my time to learn this tool, you know, what am I getting from this? So yeah, I think, you know, anything too that, to me, I'm very problem-based learning. I mean, I like you said, you know, let's look at Gettysburg. You know, what did Gettysburg do? So asking a question, and the other piece of technology is not just on the teacher side of things, but it's students having tools, right? So I want them to have a question asked and for them to have resources to go out and find information. Not only just find information though, not just research, but have tools to collaborate together. So I want them to be able to open up and share a Google Doc, you know, with three other people and then put a table in it and organize, you know, information and communicate. Or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, things that we could be throwing out as examples, but, you know, I never want for a teacher or a learner or a parent really, I don't want roadblocks. You know, that's the thing, right? Do we have enough tools that can get us through, like, I want to do this. Well, here's your tool to do that, right? Because actually, that's a little bit of what we do here. I mean, I have a teacher who will say, listen, I want to do and lay something out, you know, and it's easy sometimes to go, no, because you're busy and maybe you don't want to try to figure that out with them. But our team, we talk a lot about customer service and about what's our purpose? What are we here for? You know, we are here to support what's happening in our buildings. So if a teacher has an idea, then we'll do everything to try to figure out how to make it work. And I love the fact that most of the time I can pull the tools that we already have. I don't have to go out, you know what I mean, and find like an external tool. It just may be that they haven't thought through how can they already use what they already have, and you know, in order to do something. So that's why it is really important to have a variety of tools that are agile and flexible and stand the test of time, to your point earlier, because, you know, a lot of the times it's a big investment, not only financially, but time, learning. I mean, we've been on Schoology, our LMS, now for like 8 years, and I think we're still learning it. You know, I mean, it's easy to kind of get the basics of something, but, you know, to continue kind of pushing the boundaries and thinking, how else can I use this? You know, that is kind of cool for me. I like tools that continue to stay relevant and develop mm-hmm. and respond to needs of their users. So that all kind of goes together when you make these choices.
Yeah. And I love that because it feels like a reframing of the question. Instead of saying, what else can I use? Which in my time in the classroom, I have been guilty of doing that and saying, okay, I use this tool on Monday. What else can I use to shake things up on Tuesday? But perhaps that's not the question. It's how else can I use the tool that I used on Monday to promote deeper learning on Tuesday? And then maybe I use it in the same way on Wednesday or in a different way to be able to reach more learners, to be able to do something different. And this really, really deep knowledge allows us to get good at technology and then also allow us to build upon our content and pedagogical knowledge as well, instead of spending so much time thinking through this tool and that one, right? Which can feel a little bit counterintuitive and also just a little bit hard to do after a while.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, it can be overwhelming, like I said, to everyone involved if you just have to keep learning a new tool. And I'm not saying we don't ever go outside and grab something else,
course,
you know, but man, we have those base kind of tools and systems that are there and that work together. And, you know, it's just thinking through how to use them in a different way sometimes. So, and, you know, to your point, you mentioned deeper learning. And that's where I think you don't have to have, I mean, again, these kind of shiny, flashy things to get deep with learning. You know, some of it may not even be technology related, right? I mean, a piece of it over here may just literally be a conversation in the classroom. But then maybe the discussion feature in the LMS can lend itself to continuing that conversation later. So, you know, it's a mix. It's a, what do I need at this particular time, you know, to get to that learning and get to that engagement? And it may not start out with technology, but technology may end up swooping in later and aiding it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to hear a little bit more about that. So you all have been with Schoology for 8 years, and lots of districts are just beginning their journey with learning management systems. And you all have been one-to-one for lots of time and have been able to have access to lots of things that districts are thinking about how they make more impactful. So I'm curious to hear a little bit about some of the really innovative things that you've witnessed in classrooms or that you've been able to get off the ground. Can you tell me a little bit about something that was just awesome in your eyes?
Yeah, sure. I have actually lots of examples of that. happens out there all the time. So one of the things I think is really cool, and you know what, before I say that, I would love to tell those new those districts that are looking at these tools, you know, you don't have to know, it's like eating an elephant. I mean, you know, an LMS, I don't care if it's Schoology or Canvas or Google Classroom or whatever it is, they're big. They have lots of moving parts and they do a ton of things. And you just kind of have to give yourself permission to take one bite at a time. You know, start with organization, start with thinking through how you want to use it and what you want to do. Know that you're going to make some mistakes along the way, but you just kind of quickly correct them. I just think that districts don't hear that maybe often enough, and they feel like they have to take on this giant weight and learn everything in the first, you know, month of school or month that they roll it out. You don't. I mean, we're 8 years in and we are still learning, so it's okay. Now, that being said, one thing I think is really cool, our foreign languages have really, they love using the LMS because they use it in combination with video. And so we have a sign language class. Well, unless you are physically in the room with your teacher signing, how do you get that practice, right? Or how do you get that feedback? So our teachers have started signing and doing the assignments through sign language and then having students do their homework or their piece that they're turning in to be assessed is them videoing themselves doing the signing. And I just think that's really cool. And it's not just sign language, it's language in general. So it could be Spanish or it could be German. You know, they are speaking the language. So I just think that that is such a deeper way of doing things. And, you know, a few years ago, that wasn't done because we didn't have the tools, you know, to do it or even to dream it. I mean, we were just using the books that we had that went with the curriculum. Mm-hmm. So I just think that has been cool in our music departments, same thing, using students playing and then submitting that work. And then, you know, the teacher's able to then hear that and give feedback and, you know, hey, why don't you try this or look into that? Or, oh my gosh, you did a great job. Try this piece, stretch yourself a little. So I think there've been some just really cool things that have happened that they've learned they can do with the technology. And I think the other piece, and I haven't really mentioned this yet, but it's also I'm very passionate about is feedback. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, there's too often that we look at something after it's done and then we're just giving it a grade, right?
Sure.
But, and that's the, you know, it's like if it comes off the assembly line and it's already made, you can't roll it back and fix something along the way. So I love being able to use technology tools for feedback for students, because that's where growth happens, right? Is that when you're, I mean, we have in our LMS the ability to, we have a Google Doc attached and they could be doing a writing assignment. That teacher can actually watch that student in real time working on that assignment, and they can get in there and make comments, you know, or redirect or add a resource or whatever. So I just think that feedback is another really important piece that has come with, along with technology tools, both, you know, written and video, audio, all of it. So it's very powerful. And for kids too, you know, for students to give each other feedback has been a really great thing that has come from having an LMS and video and different types of things to work with technology-wise.
Yeah, for sure. I connect with so much of what you have said. I remember being a kid in the symphonic band, and we got to play one by one so infrequently because it meant that one child was playing while everyone else was perhaps disengaged. And it was a little bit hard to get that feedback to understand how I could play the xylophone better if I only got to play a one-on-one for my band director once a semester. And we've heard that use case on our end as well in terms of music and foreign language and what that has opened up in terms of personalized growth for individuals. And I'm also really, really interested to hear more about this student-to-student use case, right? I think that lots of times I talk to educators who are terrified of allowing students to converse with each other, to offer each other feedback. What do you say to those teachers to give them an opportunity to try that out and allow that sort of academic connection between students?
I say, you know, don't be afraid. It's very student-centered, you know, it's ownership. And not only is it ownership, but I think it really allows students to even learn more about their own learning by assessing what someone else has, you know, is working on. So, you know, sometimes we get kind of in our own bubble or in our own head about our connection to our work. But then when we start to work with somebody else, you know, that sometimes really opens up where you're like, oh my gosh, I never really thought about it like that. Or, you know, or just those soft skills of being able to talk to each other. Because I think a lot of people think of it in terms of criticism instead of feedback. And, you know, I think that we learn sometimes a little bit softer from our peers, you know, we can in a sense where, you know, there's a, you know, they're always, no matter what relationship there is, there has to be that trust there to believe, you know, what that person is telling you and to take it without, you know, a negative connotation. But I also believe when you focus on work and not an individual, it, you know, there's a lot of really good that can come from that. Plus, I think we have to get them ready. Don't we do that all the time in our own work life? I mean, they really need to know that it's okay, you know, to ask a question or to have somebody take a look at something and get another set of eyes on something and how much more you can learn from grabbing those other opinions. you know, it's, I was thinking when you were saying about, you know, getting that one turn, it's the same thing kind of with reports, right? How many times are speeches? I mean, does the whole class just sit while one student at a time goes up, you know, and presents something? And, you know, isn't there a better way that we can be doing that? I think the answer is yes. You know, we can get better feedback. We can get, you know, if you have a way, like I love discussions, online discussions, because you can post a video and have comment threads after that, or post your own video in response to the video that's been posted. So there's just a lot of different ways that you can utilize those tools to save that kind of time for learning rather than just waiting turns. You know, it's interesting to me how many times you can take a look at a project or something that you did, or maybe you decide, why are we doing this? You know, why is everybody doing the same thing? I mean, so, you know, I would challenge people to think a little deeper than that. Like, let's not, you know, let's not do the same approach. Let everybody kind of pick their own path to how they want to demonstrate that learning. So just was thinking about that when you were talking about waiting for you know, your turn.
Absolutely. I think there are interesting conversations around student choice and how technology might make that a little bit easier, right? And then there are also conversations around how we might be able to differentiate and personalize learning in lots of cool ways to be able to reach all types of learners. Because obviously, if we take a step back, we recognize that not everybody is on the exact same path to mastery, and not everybody is going to learn and internalize information in the same way. And that's where we kind of say exactly what you're saying. Let's think about, does everybody need to be doing the exact same thing at the exact same time? And very frequently, the answer to that might just be no. And then we have to figure out how we facilitate this varied experience.
And honestly, as a teacher, and I don't mean this in any kind of negative way, but it was easier when I had the same stack of papers to grade and I could flip through and, you know, look for an A, B, or C. It does get more difficult when you start to think about, you know, that deeper kind of learning and how you're going to assess whether that student is mastering, you know, those standards or those concepts. So it can be daunting for a teacher to not want to make that change because, you know, their time is so limited as far as how, you know, how they're working with students. So if we're able to show them some examples of ways to do that that become as efficient as that older way of doing things, they might be more apt to, you know, to try it. And I think that I've noticed some teachers that I personally know that have changed their teaching styles, and I think it's more engaging for them too. You know what I mean? Like, they're excited. I mean, I have a teacher who will text me at 11 o'clock at night with an idea, you know, that like, oh, I just did this happened in class today. And I was sitting here and I was thinking we could do this. And it's fun. It's just like we get joy from seeing our students engage. I mean, I get joy from seeing our teachers engage and come up with new ideas. And, you know, it's just a great learning environment for kids and for staff when that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk a little bit about this switching cost is what I'm going to call it here today, in terms of maybe as an educator being able to see what feels like this new and different way to approach teaching and learning, and perhaps being in a place where most of the instruction is whole group and not really understanding how to get from this world of uniformity to a place that offers more student choice, more differentiation, et cetera. What is the first step there, right? And I mean, there are so many things that might be a part of that road, but how do you start to take the leap?
That's a good question. And if I could ever write a book about that, I think a lot of people would buy it. You know, it's a tough conversation because I think there's not one true model to answer that. Because if you think about it, every school has a different culture and climate. Every school has a different set of tools, you know, at their disposal, or PD opportunities, or, you know, whatever it is. But I think the place you start is how, I mean, how can I take what I'm learning and make it real for kids? So I'm really big on authentic learning. I was, again, I'll say lucky. I've said that a few times during this conversation, but I do feel lucky, feel thankful coming up on Thanksgiving. I taught business. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I taught it out of a book to begin with. Well, actually, I think I made up my own curriculum at the beginning because, you know, we didn't have books for things like, you know, if you weren't English or math or social studies or science, you didn't have a book in some cases. But what I ended up doing was we ended up structuring the class so that as a senior, they got to create their own business. So I just know from my own personal experience that when I went through a book chapter by chapter and I talked about something like inventory cost, you know, sometimes I would see kind of the glazed, you know, eyes out in the audience because some business stuff is not all that, you know, exciting. But when they're running a business and they have a box of products sitting in the corner that they haven't sold yet, and they look at every single one of those costs me X number of dollars, they learn it. Do you know what I mean? Because they're living it. So now it's easy for me to say that as a business teacher because it lends itself to be able to do that sort of thing. So how does that happen in a math classroom? How does that happen in an English classroom, right? In a more like core type classroom. But I still believe that if you make the learning authentic, in other words, not just something that's in a book, but something that attaches to real life, to a real life scenario, that that's where that deeper learning comes in. And that if we maybe stop looking at things like cheating and really consider it working together, because again, that's what we do in the real world, right? I mean, if I don't know the answer to something, I pick up the phone or I send an email or I walk across the hall and I engage with someone who might know that answer. So I feel like we need to kind of take a shift completely away from, you know, the traditional school environment and teach these kids more along the lines of how they're going to work in the real world. You know, have a problem that connects to something that needs solved. So taking a priority standard and breaking that down by what is real, what are we really trying to get across to kids? And then instead of having a worksheet or something, you know, that is everybody's doing the same work, how can we break that into a question or a problem around that standard, you know, around that concept? Let kids work together. Let them curate their own information. Let them decide how they want to display it. And in a perfect world, I love having them present work to outside people. So one of the great things when I taught that business class was that they had to create an annual report. And that thing was about 12 pages long. And at the beginning of the year, they used to go, how in the world are we going to come up with 12 pages, you know, of information? And then at the end, when they were putting it together, they were like, how am I going to fit everything into 12 pages, you know? But they would have to submit that. And, you know, they would get feedback like, ooh, there were a lot of grammar errors. Like, you lost points because there were grammar errors, or, you know, you didn't include this information or that information. So isn't that a whole different way of learning rather than, you know, just a rubric or from a teacher, you know? So having that authentic work displayed outside, it can be really valuable. And there are some schools that do it. It's kind of the museum approach, and it can be done throughout all the grade levels. I saw a lot of really good work like that happening in Florida. Got the opportunity to tour some schools in Florida that were kind of taking that museum approach, and they worked on things together cross-curricularly for a 9-week or a semester. And then they would invite the community in to see what they had done and have the students there to answer questions. And you know, that kind of deeper authentic work can be really powerful. So
yeah, absolutely. And I love that because there is something simple to start with, how we connect what we're teaching to things that actually matter outside of the textbook, right? And right. I consider myself lucky as well because I got to teach civics. So I would say, okay, we're learning about the rule of law, and I can pull something right out of the New York Times and say, hey, do you think this is okay? And we can have a discussion about it, and we can talk talk about how it affects our lives. But I think what you just said is completely correct, that in every discipline, in every subject, there are going to be times where we get to connect that and make it real. And then beyond that, we get to make it so real that it actually has implications for outside of our classrooms. Mm-hmm. And I want to note here that I think in lots of ways, technology has broken down the barriers of school. So we certainly could invite community members to physically come into the school, and that's a fantastic thing to do. But if we think about students being able to present via video, we also get to push those things outside of the school. So I mm-hmm. can say, hey, I have a friend who works in something similar to what this student is interested in, who lives in Europe, and I'm going to pass this video on, and maybe they record a video back or something of that nature. So I think we can get creative about how we make learning real and about how we invite more people to partake in the learning that is happening in our classrooms and in our schools.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think haven't we all just learned that, yeah, guess what? We can do all kinds of things that we didn't think we could do. I mean, you know, there's a lot of not so great things that came from this pandemic experience, but man, there's a lot of other things that are positive that are kind of percolating out there that, you know, we learned a lot, I think, about ourselves, how we work and how we learn and how we communicate. How many of us had, you know, those family reunions through video instead of in person? I mean, you know, it definitely, if you're willing to bring down those barriers and think outside of the box a little bit, there's a lot of really great ways you can be engaging. So
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We all had to tell grandma that she was on mute a couple of times, but by yes. golly, we got her on there. I totally understand what you mean. All right. One last question for you, Kim. For folks who are looking for a little bit more information about getting started with technology, about being more student-centered, or any of the things that you care deeply about, where might you send them in terms of books, in terms of online resources, or any other place sort of like that?
You know, it sounds silly, but Google is your friend. I literally just start looking sometimes, and I've always been like this. Maybe I started like this with business, like you were giving your example of civics. You know, there were tons of business-related topics out there. So at some point, I made the switch from just my content to, you know, just what else was going on out there in education. So there are, you know, different magazines. There's education technology that has a lot of good articles in it. There are, you know, blogs out there that once I kind of stumble upon them, if I find them to be helpful, I subscribe to them. And I may not have time to read them all the time, but I have them there, you know, so I always kind of know they're there to get, you know, TPAC. There's a lot, if you just Google TPAC, there's a lot of information out there about, you know, how it started. Schoology kind of took its own look at TPAC as well. So you'll probably get a hit to how they interpret it. You know, I would just say, just start kind of looking for those buzzwords that you're hearing. I know here in Ohio, I got selected to be a part of a group, which actually I was just doing right before this call. We have been working for a few months now together about personalized learning. So, you know, there may be some activity at your state level. Contact your Department of Education at your state level, because they may already kind of have information gathered and be working toward it. We're looking at trying to make a framework that better explains for the districts in Ohio, what does personalized learning really look like? We're trying to kind of break it down and have, you know, some ways to identify all the different pieces, parts, and how to take next steps. So I know that there's a lot of states out there that are engaged in this work, and I would recommend that you start to kind of reach out to those education departments in your state and see what work is getting going on. Engage yourself. You get out what you put in. I used to tell my students that. I try to tell my own kids that. And I remind myself of that all the time. So if there is a committee that I think would be beneficial to be a part of, I join it. I am a board member for Junior Achievement because, you know, I believe in their education mission. So mm-hmm. I have always really looked at ways to get out there and get involved and meet people and learn from them. And, you know, it doesn't have to stay within your school, your department, your school, your county, your state. I mean, you have the power to engage anywhere, to learn more and meet more people and just keep growing. So that's what I would recommend. And that has what has really worked for me. So,
all right, we'll take it. Start with Google and keep growing from there.
And as far as me, I am on LinkedIn. Okay. I am on Twitter. I'm at Kimberly Knighty with the K in the N, a cap. But I'm going to be honest with you. I'm really busy and I do not engage on Twitter as much as I would love to, because I don't know, I'm a busy bee. There are four of us in the technology department here in North Canton, and we have a lot of people to help on a daily basis. So I would like to be more active than I am. But my email, kim.knighty@northcantonschools.org. I'm always happy to meet new people and have great conversations. So, and thank you for engaging with me today. This has been fun.
All right, Kim, I so appreciate you joining EdTech Heroes. Teachers, if you're listening, maybe reach out to Kim on Twitter, but definitely send her an email in terms of learning a little bit more about her approach to technology and all of the other goodies that she's espoused during our episode today. I am your host, Neff Dukes, and I am looking forward to seeing you for another episode of EdTech Heroes soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of EdTech Heroes, presented by Screencastify. Screencastify is the leading video creation tool for creating more personal learning experiences. If you enjoyed what you learned in this episode, be sure to follow EdTech Heroes wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, or visit screencastify.com to get immediate access to all the latest episodes.